Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Lots of news in the world of AEW on this new television show. Is he or isn't he? We'll get to CM Punk, Ace Steel, and all that stuff before the course of this hour is complete. But Les, we got to start with the passing of a professional wrestling legend. They would not be called WWE superstars were it not for superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah. Billy left us a couple days ago. I didn't know Billy all that well. We never socialized, but, you know, when he worked the Carolinas in the 70s, professional, easy to get along with, easy to communicate with, a complete pro, as best I could tell. And, and has been mentioned by Dave on the site, and everybody has brought it up at some point in time. So many people copied his mannerisms, his way of doing promos, and the whole nine yards. It fostered Ventura and Hogan and Dusty and on and on and on and on, and it changed the visual dramatically in our industry over the course of a couple decades. So. Yeah, it certainly left a big void. But, my God, he's got to be remembered, that's for sure, with a lot of love and respect by those who knew him. And certainly deserves every bit of credit and respect for his, you know, what he brought to the business and obviously helped make some changes.
For sure. He was a success, in a couple of NWA territories, some notable ones as well, in addition to being a big star in the AWA. But it was his time in the then WWWF that got him to a completely different level. And it was Vincent Kennedy McMahon sitting ringside calling those matches for his dad, who was watching superstar Billy Graham and thinks this is what a professional wrestler should look like. I mean, he really was the template for so many other people. I mean, Ric Flair wouldn't be blonde were it not for Billy Graham. It was Billy Graham's wife who dyed his hair before he left Minneapolis and came to Charlotte. Hulk Hogan. I mean, when no one probably remembers this, but when you were watching during the Monday Night Wars and Scott Steiner had turned on his brother and was in the process of becoming a heel, there's a vignette where it's a sit down with him and Hogan. Hogan is pitching Steiner on joining him in the NWO. And the first thing he lays on him is a new nickname. They didn't stick with it, but he was Superstar Scotty Steiner. The entire vignette, Hogan just calls him Superstar, this and that. And you saw it with Steiner, the blonde hair and the way he did the goatee, the whole thing. There are so many. Jesse Ventura will tell you straight up, he probably doesn't have a career or a persona as the body were it not for Billy Graham. I mean, if you look at the stuff Jesse wore, he looks exactly like, well, in a lot of ways, looks like the superstar. He influenced so many people.
Yeah. And, he was a legitimate hardcore bodybuilder as well. I mean,
yes.
a lot of guys. But he, he hung with Arnold and that group of guys from Venice Beach. And, been a competitive bodybuilder and having judged competitions, I'm not saying he would have been Mr. Olympia or anything like that, but yes, he was certainly, when he was in his best shape, equal to stepping on stage with any of the pros of that era. So, yeah, Billy, talking about high profile, it was with the way that Fu Manchu was, and it was hard for him to go any place and not stand out. And one of the reasons too that I'm so high on him is one of a man who managed him and who was a close friend of mine, Ernie Roth, the Grand Wizard, always spoke so highly of Billy. So, and to me, if Ernie said this guy is good and he's class act, then you could go to the bank with that. So, yeah. Like I say, it leaves a hell of a void in the history of our industry. It certainly does.
No question about that. Absolutely. And it's so funny because, you know, for a while he was really down on the business. This was, at the heights of his career after he lost the championship to Bob Backlund, down on the business, still wrestling, but, was so forlorn about what happened and the fact that he thought there was a whole lot more life left in his run in the WWF as the champion, which many people agreed with, that he actually completely changed gimmicks, shaved his head, and became a kung fu karate master who knew absolutely zero kung fu. And it was obvious. But he was so upset, depressed, call it what you want, regarding that change, that he actually ditched everything that had made him so successful, then still came back to New York with that gimmick that wasn't the real superstar Billy Graham, and still sold out everywhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just the personality. You know, he, his size, the way he carried himself and everything. I mean, there were other guys his size in terms of height and weight and everything, but his look was special. And he, you know, he walk into a room, he pretty much dominated that room, unless there were three other Billy superstar Grahams in that room. And so you know, a lot of people talk about the steroid era and everything, but realize too, I never used the juice ever, but there was a point when anabolics were legal. So it wasn't like all those guys are cheating. They weren't, you know, at initially, because anabolics were legal at one point. And he got in on the early stage and knew how to use them properly as well. And that's one of the things too, that so often, one of the big negatives for anabolics was guys picking them up, you know, out of the truck of somebody's car or a street corner, and just jamming them into their body indiscriminately and not realizing how to cycle them and how they had to eat and exercise and so forth, and you know, having negative side effects. But Billy, you know, was right on top of it. So, yeah, he's certainly, he belongs in every Hall of Fame as well, I think, because of, you know, even indirectly what he has given to the industry.
Yeah, just on the strength of the people he influenced and convinced, yes, to come into the business just from watching him on television.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I know I mentioned that he was, you know, really went into a depression about losing the WWF championship because he thought there was a lot more legs left in the run. And so many people agreed with him, by the way, including Vince McMahon, which is one of the reasons he loved the superstar forever and a day and was happy to have him back and tried to bring him back in the late 80s when Billy unfortunately was broken down and just not healthy enough to do it. He still brought him back in, 86, 87, and tried to go hard with him until Billy's body just wouldn't let him. But, you know, we've been talking a lot about the best storyline in all of wrestling, which is the Bloodline, and how well these things have been planned out. You know, you talk about plans, especially back in those days. One of the reasons Billy was so upset was that Vince Sr. did not change his plans, because the story goes, anyway, Superstar Graham was wrestling in Florida at the time, and Vince McMahon Sr. had a home down in Florida and visited often and spent a lot of time with Eddie Graham, who was, of course, running the Florida territory, and they were great friends. And he was out somewhere, I want to say on a boat, with the superstar and with Eddie Graham, and explained to him, I want you to come in. You're going to be the champion. And this is anywhere from 6 months to a year before he actually came in. Told him exactly what day he was going to win the championship and where. And at that meeting, told him exactly what date he was going to lose the championship and where. And Billy Graham agreed to it. And just like anything else, I mean, you know, you hear all this and it's like, sure, great. And I'm sure at the time he didn't think twice about, well, lose the championship on whatever date. But then he gets in there and he turns the territory on fire. Every place he goes is sold out. The people cannot get enough of this guy. He is the heel everybody hates, and then everybody loves to hate him. And he's starting to get as many cheers as he's getting boos. And he starts looking at this date approaching and thinking, man, you know, if I turned babyface here, we could have a whole nother year plus out of this. And he was probably right. But Vince McMahon Sr. was a guy who stuck to his plans, and he went with Bob Backlund. And, you know, that rubbed Billy the wrong way, because the more he thought there was money being left on the table, the more he started looking at the All-American Bob Backlund, which is exactly what Vince Sr. wanted as a, you know, a 180-degree change from the guy who currently has the title in Billy Graham. And he's thinking, how are they going to win with this guy? compared to me. And so that was part of the fact that he didn't, you know, that Vince Sr. stuck with the plan really sunk Billy, because he thought there was just so much more there that they all missed out on, and all of wrestling missed out on, in his opinion.
Well, you know what? And if you look at, with hindsight, he wasn't far off the mark.
No.
He really wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
Backlund was a hell of a wrestler. But charismatic? No, not really. And but technically as sound as anybody could possibly be. And like I say, he was a talent, but not the guy to be carrying a belt. And his run was actually probably a lot shorter than they had anticipated when they put the strap on him, don't you think?
You're talking about Graham?
Yeah, no, about Backlund.
Well, the thing with Backlund, he held the belt for a number of years, but one of the things that people will tell you, the detractors of that lengthy run that he had as WWF champion, was that a lot of those cards, you know, Vince was not going to concede that this was a bad decision. Obviously, father and son had a lot in common.
And so, yes, they did.
So one of the things Vince Sr. was determined to do was to make sure that Bob Backlund shows Drew. So you saw a lot more Dusty Rhodes in the territory when Bob Backlund was the champion. You saw a lot of appearances from Andre the Giant when Bob Backlund was the champion, and they would often be on the same shows together. Vince Sr. made sure that cards were loaded so that anything that had a Bob Backlund title defense on it did well. And so that he could look at everybody else who was saying those things, including folks who sided with Superstar Graham, and say, we're doing just fine here with Bob Backlund. I told you so. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell you Bob didn't draw, wasn't a popular guy. He was loved for most of his run by the viewing public in the Northeast. I can tell you that for a fact. I grew up here. But would I tell you that he was the success of Billy Graham? I mean, no, because you could put Billy Graham on a show with, you know, one or zero other big matches, and you'll see his record in this front page of the Observer. It's on the front page of the Observer. It's the lead story, obviously, for at F4WOnline.com. His record of sellouts at Madison Square Garden is unparalleled for the length of time that he was a main eventer in the territory. And if you look at and compare those cards, Backlund's roster was much more stacked on nights he was at the Garden or any of the major arenas in the Northeast, because Vince Sr. was concerned that Billy Graham would be proven right if he didn't stack those cards.
Don't we? Sometimes we go a bit out of our way to prove a point.
Yes.
That's a fact. But yeah, you know, it's all crazy. But yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought about that. But yes, Backlund had a lot of good support to draw. And you know what? In smart business, that's always a good thing.
Sure.
But still, it's the guy on top who's going to either get the credit or the blame, for that matter. It's like the quarterback in football or the manager in baseball. It's easier to fire the manager than it is the whole team. So, and that guy on top is, well, I've said to you before, the first big main event that I was ever in Charlotte Coliseum back in 1997 in a building that size. And I knew everybody else in that match had drawn. And I thought, I was sweating bullets, because I thought, if this thing don't draw tonight, I know where the blame goes, whether it belongs there or not.
That's right.
I know where it's going.
It won't be the guys who have the rep of drawing.
No, it sure won't. But I was able to take a deep breath, because we drew the biggest Christmas crowd that they'd ever had in the old Charlotte Coliseum at that point in time. But yeah, you got to think about those things. And sometimes great performers are in the wrong place at the wrong time and don't draw. So that's the thing about this business too. I know a lot of people think, it's pretty simple. You just do this. You put these guys here. No, it's not. There are times you think something, this is going to draw huge. Well, what happened? And other times something will catch fire and you not realize it's going to do that. But when it does, you're going to ride it to the end. So that's one of the things that makes us all nervous wrecks in this business over a period of time as well.
You know what? You say the phrase there, nervous wrecks in this business. And while it was a big week for AEW and Tony Khan and the big announcement of AEW Collision coming to TNT on Saturday night starting June 17th, I imagine he might be a bit of a nervous wreck himself, and you'd be thinking, why? I mean, he just got a new deal for a new show. There's a whole lot more money coming in. They've sold close to 65,000 seats at Wembley Stadium and opening up more sections all the time. There may well be 70-plus thousand in there by the time we get around to this show, which is an enormous success. And everything around CM Punk, this show, is he a part of it? Is he not a part of it? All the conjecture that went down earlier this week. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like he might be a bit nervous, especially based on some of the stories that are not only in the Observer, but also have been parceled out and are currently on the front page of our website, Les, regarding everything going on with Punk, Ace Steel, and whether or not they're going to be coming back. Obviously, if you follow this, you have heard that earlier this week, Punk was originally on all the promotional material and in the press release, and apparently something allegedly happened over the course of the week that led Tony to ask Warner Brothers Discovery to remove Punk, and the photo or the poster that you may have seen on social media this week making the rounds, allegedly Punk's face is where MJF was then put in to replace CM Punk on the poster. I tend to think, and you know what, I said this to you off the air, at this point, there's just so many stories about this is going to work, this is not going to work, this is coming together, it's not coming together. I'm actually halfway convinced that Tony's letting half these stories come out because he doesn't want anyone to know what's really going on, and he's happy to work the entire wrestling world until the 17th of June if he can. But wow. The whole thing about whether or not Ace Steel can come back to work, the fact that you'll see in the Observer this week when you read it, apparently Ace Steel has been back in AEW employee for a number of months, allegedly. And the thing that was the sticking point this week, so the stories go, is that he's been working remotely and would continue to do so. And apparently this was news to Punk, who thought Steel was going to be at every single episode of Collision. And when he was told that that was not the plan, that he hit the roof and things hit a snag. I don't know how much of any of this I buy. I just know that we say this a lot. And I know we were saying it last week or the week before about something else. I just need this boss to be the damn boss. You know, I don't care which side you come down on, whether you agree that with the elite that Punk and Steel should never be allowed to return, or if you think Punk and Steel should be here and the elite should shut their mouths and let's just make this money. My thing is, if you're the boss, just walk into the room and say, this is what we're doing. If you don't like it, leave.
You know what? Yes, that's simplistic, but to the point. And you have the, you know, and a lot of times guys who are demanding this and demanding that aren't really I mean, they will give up those things if they think their job and income is in jeopardy, mm-hmm. you know. But here's the deal about Ace, because first of all, Ace Steel was a friend of mine. He's a hell of a guy. And first of all, why was he involved on the night all this nonsense happened? Well, he was involved because his wife was in Punk's dressing room watching over Punk's dog. She had a walking cast on one foot, and all these guys run in there and starting, you know, a fight, a push fight, whatever. And so Ace has gone in there to probably to protect his wife. Now somebody made him, punched him, pushed him, shoved him, and he bit Omega. Oh my God. Could have been almost anybody but Kenny Omega, right? Because that's the greatest wrestler to ever walk face God's green earth. Well, I got news for you. He's not A, and B, he put his hand in the wrong place. He's lucky he didn't take a finger off or they didn't punch him and ruin him that way. But anyway, the point is this. You know, Ace and Punk started and virtually started in this business together, grew up in it together. They were the Second City Saints along with Colt Cabana. They first worked for me. You know, nobody else. I mean, that's who they were, the Second City Saints. So there's a hell of a bond there, a hell of a friendship there. And it shouldn't be any different than the Elite and Omega, you know, being bonded together. But the point is, why would he work remotely? That doesn't. I'm guessing a part of it would be that Punk wants Ace to help produce his matches. Or and Ace is good at that. Ace, you know, was a trainer at the Performance Center. I've worked with Ace in training camps when we did Harley's, when we did the week-long NOAA tryout camps in Eldon, Missouri, back a number of years ago. So, yeah, he's valuable. And if the elite aren't going to be there, why the worry? I notice that Andrade is going to be on this, I don't know whatever you want to call this, Saturday show. Would that be to keep him away from Sammy because they had an altercation?
I'm assuming so. I looked at the press release and the poster and the names that they chose outside of CM Punk, like Samoa Joe and, as you mentioned, Andrade and Thunder Rosa. And Joda has, to the best of our knowledge, hasn't had any issues with anybody. But I looked at Rosa and I looked at Hobbs, who's been criminally underutilized. And I see Andrade and I think to myself, there's a lot more truth to it. And we knew there was at the time anyway. We talked about the idea that Punk was going to have a crew, essentially, and Wednesday was going to have their own crew, and we'll see how things work out with a handful of people going back and forth. But I looked at those headlines, the headline of the press release and who the big names were there outside of Punk. And I thought to myself, yeah, you know, Punk said, I'm going to take every one of these people you say is a problem, every one of these people who hasn't worked out for you so far, and I'm going to win with them. And then we'll see how you feel about it.
Well, you know, that wouldn't be the first time that's happened in my years of history in this industry. You know, it's the business objective. And sometimes somebody sees something in a talent or a team that nobody else sees. And, well, you know, I can go all the way back to 1966, the first time I ever worked in Atlanta, Georgia. I've told the story. I won't go into the whole damn story about it tonight, but my first match in the old Atlanta Auditorium on a Friday night was Roger Kirby and I against a new tag team that, well, I say new, they were getting their first push in the business because Leo Garibaldi, the booker, saw, and he said to us that night, he said, I want to get these guys over because they're going to be my top heel team for a long run. And those two guys were Gene and Lars Anderson, who had been working as a team. They had been in the Carolinas briefly, as I understand it. They had been in the Nashville territory. Nobody had pushed them. And stop and think where the Anderson name went, where that team initially started, that added Ole, then added Arn, et cetera, et cetera. And somebody didn't – they worked in several territories where nobody saw that they had that kind of value. But Garibaldi did. So, you know, that's the other thing too. You and I were talking about this before we started recording. Samoa Joe's name came up. Those guys go back to the world title in Ring of Honor, as I've said to you, when Gabe Sapolsky, who was the owner and booker, et cetera, of the company at that time, when he decided they needed a new world title belt. I presented that new belt to Joe, who was the champion in Dayton, Ohio, on the night he defended that title in a 60-minute match against, guess who? CM Punk. Mm-hmm. So they know that they can have a match. They know that they had, you know, a good feud. So now, am I comparing them to Briscoe and Dory? Am I comparing them to Flair and Steamboat? No, but they have a history and they know what their chemistry works together. So yeah, if CM has any say so, and Joe knows their track record together. So Joe's probably tickled to death to do that. So but you know, here's the bottom line. You said it earlier, walk in and say, I am the boss. Here's what I've decided to do. I've talked it over with my people. Here's what's going to happen. You don't like that? Well, we can easily void your contract, you know, because this becomes high school all over again, right? I mean, I don't get it. Well, I don't get it.
That's what we have. And I mean, by all accounts, you've said it yourself from what you've heard. Tony Khan is an incredibly nice man who it probably pains him to be difficult with anybody. And I get that. I totally get that. But when I see this, it's screaming out for somebody to put their foot down and has been for a long, long time. And I think about something else, too. There was a story that Bill Cowher used to tell the Football Hall of Famer and legendary head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who came in, you know, by the his last handful of years with the Steelers. I mean, you know, he was the father figure, grandpa, you use the family adjective. Everybody loved him. And while he had his moments where he could be grumpy, you know, the team had a completely different relationship with him, say, in the last 5 to 7 years of his coaching career than they did in the first 5 or 6. And he was known as a pretty stern disciplinarian for a long time in Pittsburgh. So why was that? Well, he said once, you know, it's a lot easier to come in rough and let some of that gruff exterior and some of the hard ass stuff go and mellow out with the group as you guys mature together than it is to come in nice and easy and then decide you have to put your foot down. It's a lot more difficult to do things that way. And Tony has found himself in that situation, but this is what the situation is calling for.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I agree with you 100%. And, yeah, now anybody's worked with me, if anybody goes way back with me, when I first started training guys on a regular basis, I was a lot more of a hard ass than I mean, I'm still a hard ass when it's necessary, but back then I had to establish who I was. And then I was, because I took over for a guy, who by all counts, absolutely knew very little, but was, it's, you know, conned his way into to running this school. And so, yeah, when I came in, I said, okay, boys, here's the deal. The bad news is you're starting with basics again, because you need those basics and need to learn properly. Good news is you're going to be a lot better in a few weeks than you were yesterday. So, but yeah, I agree with you 100%. And to have to divide your talent up like this, and then you got some guys who aren't mad at anybody, can flow back and forth, it's counterproductive. I mean, it truly is. But, you know, wow. Wednesday night crowd went south again, right?
Well, that Vanderpump Rules, buddy, plus that NBA playoff game. But I know there were some things about the show as well that left a little bit to be desired for you.
Well, you know, first of all, if you go on Twitter, and if Rip Rogers is hooked in with you on Twitter, are you with him? Or you can see, he posted the video that I sat here and I jerked back. I reacted to. Is if anybody listening to us remembers the match with Roosh and Jungle Boy. And Roosh gave him a bump off the apron that I thought, my God, is he going to get up from this? And Rip posted that video because it was, I don't care what anybody said, it was a bad bump. And Rip posted, I don't remember the exact verbiage, but Rip said, people are going to remember that great bump for 10 minutes. You're even going to forget about it even though you took it. But by the time you're 60, you'll remember it because you'll be half paralyzed. And his point was that it was a stupid move. If that's what it takes to get you over, then you shouldn't get over. And had Jungle Boy not gotten up, it wouldn't have surprised me. It wouldn't have. And I don't know if you can find that video out there or not, but it was, man, it was like splat on that floor. And yes, I know there's a rubber padding there, but that's hardly adequate to not, you know, sustain some sort of injury. And realize this, a lot of you, these guys know what they're doing, but luck comes into a lot of this as well. And I just wanted to bring that up. Now, the highlight for me was the Falls Count Anywhere match, because they counted anywhere, because it's the first time that there was a stipulation match that I remember that didn't involve tables, chairs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they finally went outside, and I thought it was a great way to include Adam to build the steam between him and Jericho, because Adam was barred from the building, but he wasn't barred from the property. And it was the best stipulation match that I have seen on AEW in maybe ever, because it was what it was meant to be. It wasn't just let's do a lot of dives and chairs and tables. Okay. And I thought that was the outstanding match of the night. Then at the very end, you know, the bust out where the Elite is going to battle with the Blackpool guys, and Paige comes out to reunite with the Elite, sadly enough, and that's just personal opinion. But the rest of the show was pretty much, it was an AEW show. There was run-ins, outside interference, or double teaming in every segment. And it was a, you know what, and Mrs. Moxley should be utilized better than she is, quite frankly.
You know what? But as much as they use her, she's the unspoken MVP right now.
Yeah, because she covered, yeah. But, I mean, she's so much more valuable.
Yes.
I mean, to do sit-downs. And, you know what, Tony Schiavone is a good guy. Tony and I have never spent a lot of time together, but I have no problem with Tony whatsoever, except on Wednesday night when he said, I don't like this guy I'm about to talk to. And you know what, as the commentator or as the interviewer, you shouldn't show so much emotion. And you didn't need to establish that to get him out there. They get to get Callis out there. But anyway, the numbers were down. Vanderpump was up. And my biggest problem with the NBA right now, I want to see the Celtics against the Lakers in the final because LeBron is a Buckeye, and I love him for that. And so I'd like to see the Lakers. And I've been a Celtics fan since going back to Cousy and Russell. And, of course, I went and saw him live in 60 and 61 while I was training to wrestle there. With Bill Russell and party. So, but damn, Lakers got knocked off two in a row, man. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, wrestling. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that the numbers were down. And my point being this, they are doing so much with so many people that nothing is really gets to you and where you have time to digest it and lock into it, or at least me anyway, and I'm going to make a comparison here where I've had a couple people say, well, you know, WWE doesn't have as many people on their roster.
What?
Now I don't.
Yes,
you know,
they
I
do.
Haven't sat down and yeah.
They have to. I'm going to look this up.
Well, you know what, whether they do or they don't, my point is this. They aren't trying to feature 150 people in a two-hour show. So why did Roman and company get over? Why did Sammy get over? Why did why is all this working? Because they're pinpointing those particular storylines where, as far as I know, Tony Khan and whatever help he's got behind the scenes, who that is or what that is, I have no clue. But they're trying to get 100 people over. I like that, so I'll remember that. But how much of a show? Now, you tell me, how much of Tuesday night or Wednesday night do you have committed to memory? And can you give me the whole show in its entirety?
Well, I remember the result of the Falls Count Anywhere match because it was the complete opposite of what we were expecting or what the way that thing has been booked for, I don't know, 50 or 60 years in wrestling, which is actually something I want to ask you about in a little bit, but we'll get to that when we get to it. But between that and really Don Callis and the Elite with Hangman Page coming out at the end, the only two things I could tell you with any kind of certainty I remember from this past week.
Yes, me as well. I know you mentioned about Starks and Hobbs. I see a value in Ricky Starks. I truly do. He is a better heel than I think than a babyface because he wants to be a heel with his, you know, I'm trying to be rock and I'm not pose and that sort of thing. And he's still doing it as a face. But I've noticed in his matches, well, like go back to this past Wednesday night, it took a while before the fans really got into the match. And I'm not saying that's Ricky Starks' fault, but I'm just not sure, you know, that he is over that strong. But I don't know why they've backed off of Hobbs so much either. I mean, they could have put him with somebody else. And here we go again with Wardlow. Hey, they're pushing Wardlow. Hey, they're not pushing Wardlow. Hey, they're pushing Wardlow. Hey, they're not pushing Wardlow. Well, make up your damn mind. Are you going to push Wardlow or aren't you?
Oh, right? Well, I mean, now that you've reminded me, by the way, about Wardlow, can we just mention this again, which is another typical AEW thing, unfortunately? The first match in the feud now, we're going to have a ladder match?
Right. Yeah, stupid. I mean, it is. It is stupid. And if you are a part of professional wrestling and you understand booking, you understand promotion, you understand in-ring work and stuff, it is stupid. It's, I'm not calling anybody in particular, but it's just you're starting at the end and going and backing up, I guess. You know, I don't know. But yeah, I'll tell you something else that they've got to stop doing, because you know it's what's going to happen beforehand. When Paige came out and they lined up how many friggin' security guys, right?
Well, you knew what was coming.
There?
Yeah, no, you knew what was coming.
Yes, and I thought, I won't use the word here, but I said, ah, F. Here we go with this stupidity, right? So it's not that Wardlow was bigger than all these guys and beat up 10,000 security guys. Now you can be any size and beat up all. So why the hell do you even have security guys? Why don't you fire this security company? Because obviously they ain't worth a damn. It's a bad comedy skit now. It doesn't matter. Tony, you've got to realize nobody cares. The minute you line these guys up, we all say, I roll my eyes and go to the refrigerator. I don't know what everybody else does, but come on, stop it. There is another problem, and I don't know if that's what creates the up and down of their numbers or not. But again, okay, I've seen this. Okay, I've seen that. Okay. I mean, and there's nothing in wrestling that I can think of except stopping to show your opponent what you're supposed to do in the middle of a house show, which is I had never seen until I watched AEW. It's just, you don't do those things, right? I mean, it frustrates me because there are good people in that company. There are good talents in that company there. I want to see them succeed as well. But it's throwing something against the wall and see what sticks is the best I can explain it.
Well, there's going to be a little bit more of that. And if Punk doesn't show up in a few weeks to what's rumored to be the first Collision show in Chicago, that was not officially announced. We'd have the date, June 17th, but the venue was purposely left out this past week on television. We believe that to be Chicago. If he's not there, then we're going to get a whole lot more of that on Saturday, too. There's not going to be any doubt about that.
Yes, yes. And before tonight... what time is Rampage on tonight, 6:30?
Oh, gosh, is it preempted again? Oh, my goodness.
I think so.
It's just been murder pretty on their sure. numbers. But
oh, yeah. Well, Saturday night at 10 o'clock is not... You know, and I'd be curious, you know, how this Saturday show goes. I hope they do well with it. But Saturday evening... or Saturday, you know, late Saturday evening or Saturday, whatever, they is not a great time for a wrestling show. Not since Georgia Championship Wrestling left.
That's right. It hadn't been any good since Georgia went to Crockett and Crockett turned into WCW.
You're right.
That is true. Yeah, today's Rampage, as we record this on Friday morning, is going to be Friday evening, 6:30 on TNT.
So I'll have to go and... Damn, it'll be opposing ABC Evening News.
Whatever shall I watch?
I'm being a smart ass. I'm sorry. I have to have a sense of humor. I know we're jumping all around today, but I want to mention, since you called my attention to this, that I am in good company. A lot of people thought that Cody Rhodes should win at WrestleMania 39 and beat Roman and get the title. And I was one of those who didn't. And now I'm finding out that I'm in good company. And if we're wrong, I'm happy to be wrong with people like Steve Austin, Paul Heyman, and Dustin Rhodes. But I just wanted to bring that up and crow a little bit since you beat me in the damn list.
But you know what? And all of you are on the set. I was one who thought Cody should have won. But when I hear you say that, yeah, and Paul Heyman say that, and Jim Cornette say that, and now Steve Austin talking about that on Busted Open Radio this week, as Steve said, and I'm going to quote him directly, Cody beating Roman would not have gotten Cody over anymore. As a matter of fact, it might have worked against him, in Austin's opinion. And he went on to say, Roman's on fire right now, and one of these days, it'll be time to take the belt off of him and put it on somebody else. But you don't make Cody by taking the belt off of the right guy at the wrong time, end quote.
Yes, they're two really, really top workers, guys I respect. Their work, I've never wrestled one of them, but I've wrestled the other one God knows how many times, that neither one should have been the NWA World Champion for that. And that would have been Ronnie Garvin and Tommy Rich. Not that they weren't, like Garvin is a top heel right here in Knoxville. Man, drew like crazy. And he's a hell of a hand. Tommy, as you know, was a hot property as a baby face. But the belt that did nothing for them, and they did nothing for the belt. Don't ask me why. I'm not smart enough to know. But there are just certain people that, you know, that privilege shouldn't be offered to. And I would say that I'm one of those same people, you know. I think we all want to be world champion when we get in this bit, right? I mean, if you want to play professional baseball, you want to go to the World Series. You want to play professional football, the Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody wants to be world champion. Until you get in the business, and then at some point the realization sets in, I'm, you know, here's my level, become the best you can be at that particular level. Which, obviously, Tommy Rich didn't say, I want to be world champion, make me world champion, and he was. That was the and I'll say this, Jim Barnett did well by me, and Jim Barnett, for those who don't know, is a guy who gave me the last name Thatcher. But I think Jim more, he liked Tommy, and was drawing money with Tommy, and I think more as a reward to Tommy, I think Jim was in control of the belt at this point in time, and Jim wanted to put it on Tommy. And it just didn't work out well. First of all, it was short term.
Yes.
And that didn't do anything for Tommy at all. And it certainly didn't do anything to hurt Harley. But it was a useless transfer, I think.
I don't know that anybody has the answer, but you're about as close to anyone who would have an idea just based on your years of experience in the business. So I'll run this by you since you brought up Tommy Rich. You know, at the time, he was arguably the hottest babyface in America, being on national television, essentially, national cable TV with Georgia Championship Wrestling, and just how on fire the territory was with Tommy Rich as the lead babyface. I mean, you could argue for a period of time he was at the same level, or at least near it, as close to the top babyface in America as Dusty Rhodes was at the time. Dusty Rhodes' first NWA World Championship reign was 5 days, you know, a week in the Florida territory, winning it and losing it back to Harley Race in the same week. Basically, the same thing happened. It was Race on a week through the territory in Georgia. Tommy Rich got 4 or 5 days. Why was it essentially the end of Tommy Rich as one of the hottest faces in America, and it did not destroy Dusty Rhodes?
I think because it was more widely seen. With Dusty, it was seen in Florida. I didn't see it in the Carolinas. You didn't see it in New York.
No.
You know, but when with Tommy and Harley, that's when you know, Superstation was all over the country, and that's when we were running. You know, I was handling shows in Ohio, Michigan, and West Virginia for a company based in Atlanta, Georgia. So it was, and it took the fire out. You know. I mean, him and, you know, he had some great feuds with guys, but I think in part, well, you know, the other thing is part of the fan base with guys like Tommy or guys like Dustin or Cody, it's the fight to get there is the most important thing. But, you know, we used to always talk about with Tommy, little girls and grandmothers loved him. They'd cry, you know, if he got blood and this. I mean, and it was kind of a joke, but it was a fact as well. You know, he was that hot. But I think once, you know, he got so close to that brass ring, and that drew more of the young girls and the grandmothers, and I mean, and male fans too, but, you know, you get my point, toward him. Then he won the belt. Wow. We all take a deep breath. The battle's over. Now we can follow our guy at the championship. And 5 days later, he wasn't the champion anymore. So you kind of gave them the climatic end to his struggle, but then the struggle began all over again in less than a week. Am I making any sense at all?
You are, and now that I think about it, that 1 week with Dusty in Florida was not only just seen in Florida, but they did an angle. You actually might remember this, or maybe you've talked to Terry about it. You know, Terry Funk jumped Dusty before that match where he lost the belt back to Race, and he was beaten and I believe had his arm broken or something along those lines. Then decided, even though he had been beaten and left to lay in the aisle there before Race could even get to the ring for the match, you know, being the fighting champion Dusty was, he says, no, we're going to have this match. And he went in there handicapped, essentially, and lost that title back. So there was also that thing of, you know, he got screwed by Terry Funk. So it was not only a place for him to go, but the entire building saw and could walk out of that building that night saying, well, Dusty would have won if it wasn't for that damn Terry Funk.
Right. Now, one of the things that we didn't have during Dusty down there was, you know, the national TV.
Right.
But what we did have was national wrestling magazines on every newsstand in the country. And God knows, at the height of wrestling magazines, I guess there must have been 7 or 8 out there, you know, with monthly consistency. Now, they pick up on whatever you want them to pick up on. I mean, let's face it, I used to write some, when we started the t-shirt business, I wrote some articles for different magazines, and you know, in return, they would put an ad for the Briscoe Booster T-shirts. So anyway, now they're pushing somebody, right? But they weren't pushing Tommy Rich as a champion, pushing him as a contender. Ronnie Garvin got a lot of ink, but never as a number one challenger, not on a national basis with the magazines or with television, as far as I know. And like I say, I admire the guy as a worker. I've worked with him, I don't know, 100 times probably. But it was more an afterthought. I don't know if I'm making sense or not. There wasn't, like, you knew Flair was going to be champion before he got to be champion. You knew Dory was, you knew Jack was, you knew Terry was. Did you know Garvin was? Did you know Tommy was? No, you did not. And yeah. I'm sure a psychiatrist or some college graduate with 4,000 degrees could explain it far better than me, but that's the best I've got. I don't know if I'm making sense to you or not.
No, the magazine buying public at that time was very significant. I mean, you can sort of liken it, I guess, for some of our younger fans, to everybody who pays attention to every single thing that happens on sites like this or happens in the business because of sites like this. And so the right narrative was not out there nationally amongst the magazine buying public, which again was a pretty significant portion of the pro wrestling audience, that these guys were future champions or championship material. They just all of a sudden turned up as the champion, and it was like, wait, I didn't see that coming. What happened? What'd I miss?
Thank you. And you just gave me, here is a comparison or an analogy that maybe is easier for our listeners to understand as well. Okay. Dave Meltzer has been telling you that the Young Bucks are probably the best tag team ever in the wrestling business. How many years has he been telling people that? So to a lot of the fans of this site, they are indeed the best tag team in the world. Now, if he just turned around and started saying FTR is, and said it long enough, then a lot of the readers and a lot of the followers would shift gears. I say this because I hadn't thought to make this comparison, but you realize part of Gordon Solie's job, my job, Ed Caprell, Jim Ross, Bob Cottle, Lance Russell, our job was to make you like the guy that we're pushing, our promotion is pushing currently. So we're now, our credibility shot to hell if we're telling you somebody is and it's obvious that they're not. But that also established our credibility. So if you're an Observer site follower, reader of the Observer in print form, whatever, and you have been for 10 years or whatever, and I'm not saying this to say Dave's wrong or right or indifferent. I'm just saying if you buy into Dave as the guru, then he can tell you that Brian's granny is the top dog. And at some point, somebody's going to believe it. Am I making sense?
Yeah, it's your job as a commentator, and everyone's at the time, and the magazine writers even, to set the narrative. And it's not that Dave is necessarily trying to set a specific narrative for a specific purpose, but if that's where you get your information and that's what he's telling you, there's really no reason out there for you to disbelieve it if you're not reading anything else.
Absolutely, absolutely. So those things, you know, those are things that are factors that people usually don't think about. Well, he didn't do well as champion. Boy, just not very good. Well, wait a minute. Ronnie Garvin is a hell of a worker. Are you kidding me? Tommy Rich, a hell of a wildfire, a hell of a baby face. I mean, the 14 and 15-year-old girls, you know, are having dreams about this guy. Grandmas, you know, want to hug him and say, you'll be my grandson. But he was being pushed verbally by the announcers in written form by the magazines. That was Ronnie Garvin has been put over hell by going back to when I was working by magazine stories, by promoters, but never in a huge national. This guy is chasing the world title and he's got a shot at it. So when you put it there, And sometimes a surprise is good. In this case, it wasn't. It wasn't necessarily bad for Ronnie in his terms of his career, but it wasn't good for the belt, or it wasn't. Ronnie made a few bucks with it, but, I mean, it wasn't like a good long run, and so he was able to retire or anything. So, yeah, all these factors, you know, it's not just this guy. They got his hand raised four times, so now we're going to turn him into a great wrestler. Well, maybe, maybe not. You know, there's more to it than just getting his hand raised or beating him, for that matter. I don't know if I'm getting too deep or if I'm not.
Oh, no, I like it. I'm just looking at our time here and I'm thinking, well, we're going to be a little long today, too, because there's one other thing in WWE today that I really want to get to, because I'm interested to see if you like this as much as I enjoyed it in the past 7 days. And your overall thoughts on another twist and turn with the Bloodline. I guess it's notable, and we should probably start with the fact that Sami Zayn is headed to Saudi Arabia. One of the reasons we thought that maybe that match with the Usos was a neon sign that the tag team championship run of Zayn and Owens was going to be short-lived was because Sami had not done a Saudi Arabia show in forever. He had actually done one in a house show tour before they had started doing televised events in 2014, but had not been back since. And apparently, this was because of an issue between Syria and Saudi Arabia diplomatically. And the Arab League suspending Syria's membership years ago. And so the story is that Saudi Arabia, because of this diplomatic issue, did not want any Syrians in the country. Since diplomatic relations have been restored, Sami and anybody else he'd like to bring apparently now welcome, which is why this tag team match is happening in Saudi Arabia this coming weekend less. But the curveball that I'm not sure anybody saw coming until SmackDown was that the Usos are not getting a rematch with Zayn and Owens. Instead, it's going to be Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa. What'd you think of that?
I think I got my finish. I don't know if it'll be the finish or not.
Give it to me.
Cody trips up the heel and Sami and Kevin retain.
Oh, Cody's interference. You think so?
Sure. Why not? Did Roman cost him a title?
Well, the Usos, yeah.
Solo cost him a title?
That's true.
Turnabout's fair play. Screw the bull, you get the horns and that sort of thing, right?
Something to keep some issue there percolating, even though they're on different shows.
Sure. And Cody's could even have the, you know, I mean, this Cody could pin Roman in that respect. I mean, not Cody, but Sammy could pin Roman, which is going to embarrass the hell out of Roman, obviously, the character he's portraying. It's going to embarrass the hell out of him. He's going to be out of his mind. He's not only mad at you, so he's probably going to be mad at their brother too, right? Because he didn't save him. But yes, it can get Sammy's, and it's still continues to add steam to the Cody-Roman dynamic.
Cody obviously has his own hands full with Brock Lesnar next weekend, and that's something we'll talk about on the next show we have together. But this whole thing with now Sokoa and Reigns and Roman now going after the tag team championship to teach the Usos a lesson. I'm still waiting for the moment where the Usos confront Solo and say, hey, we're your brother. I mean, we're all family here.
You're right.
But that guy's not your brother. What are you doing running with him and running interference against us? What's going on here?
Yeah. That's got to come up at some point. It certainly does. But yeah, I think, when I saw this and I got to think about it, I thought, well, it works for me. Cody comes out and trips Roman. Does whatever, or it doesn't have to be Roman. It could be so too. But I think it'd be great if Sammy tops Roman. I mean, what if Cody comes out and nails him with a set of knucks and Roman falls unconscious and Sammy pins him? Roman doesn't even know who pinned him until he sees the video. And then he loses his mind on Monday night.
Wants to know where the other three were.
Yes, exactly. And it keeps the feud going, right?
Well, it does, because he's not only mad at the rest of the family, but now he's looking at Rhodes because Rhodes embarrassed him.
And if you go back, if you see something and you know how to handle it, let's go back to when Garibaldi said, these guys are going to be my lead heels for quite a run. That was in 1966, and he was just starting to push them. They were still leading the charge in early 67. So, yeah, he did see it. And they continued to have a great on and off run in Atlanta for years. But, yeah, I think... And again, it may not happen the way I'm talking about, but if Cody trips up Roman and Sammy gets the win, and everybody, the fans are going to blow their minds, and that is a good return for Sammy to show up in Dubai, right?
Well, let me give you the other side and tell me if there's something you can do with this too. What if Roman and Solo prove the point and they win the tag team championships? How does being one of the Usos work for you being in the bloodline for the next goodness knows how long, having to hear about this from the tribal chief?
Well, it wouldn't work well. It wouldn't work too well, and it would probably fragment the bloodline.
Right.
But the other thing with that, the reason I wouldn't do it, is now Roman has got every title available. How many can he defend at one time?
True.
And it just, it narrows down the possibilities as well. And where Sammy and Kevin can go out and have great matches like with Gunther's guys or, anybody and slip those guys over in non-title match stuff. Roman is not a guy that you want to do that with, because you've made him up to be, the man. So the last thing you need him is to go out there and start, working tag matches to hang on to the belts and starting to make guys who are more upper mid card look good when he needs to stay sharp to work at the top.
Makes sense.
And again, this is what I would do, which doesn't mean it's what's going to be done. It's just, as Dr. Tom likes to say, Les likes chocolate and I like vanilla, but it's all ice cream, meaning that there's more than one way to skin the cat, right? In basics, but
well, now I'm
so
thinking.
I don't know.
Now I'm thinking too much, but let me just toss this at you when we're rapid here.
Oh, keep thinking. I love it.
What if they go? Modern day style would be New Day rules, but of course they were known as the Freebird rules. What if Roman and Solo win the titles. And then Roman says, well, the Bloodline won. Any members of the Bloodline can defend. And then he spends the next however many months giving the Usos grief about, well, you can carry it tonight because I'm allowing it.
Yeah, they could do that. But then that would put all the steam on the Bloodline in terms of good or bad. I mean, that's then pretty much the whole feature of whatever the story is going to be will be on them opposed to their opponents. Mm. And in this respect, you, Sammy and Kevin are still at odds with the Usos. Cody has built a bigger head of steam with Roman. Roman still is pissed at Sammy and KO, and he's still pissed at his cousins, and he's got more steam against Cody. So you affect more warm bodies by doing it this way than you would the other way. Makes sense?
It does, and it reminds me of what Cody was saying a couple of weeks ago before this tournament for the new WWE Championship, which will be primarily defended, obviously, on Raw, and they'll have that determination next week in Saudi Arabia between Seth Rollins and AJ Styles, but Cody was still talking about that being a Raw guy now and separated from Roman on different brands, but making it very clear he had not given up on the idea of defeating Roman for that championship, even though they were on opposite shows. So Cody having something to do here with what happens next week, if they decide to go in that direction, maybe shows you that they have been doing, guess what, some more long-term thinking. Maybe Cody wasn't just going out on his own there hoping that someone would pay attention to what he said in this article. That the idea is to eventually get him over there and get that figured out. So he's planting little seeds here and there, like that comment he made a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Those are that's what keeps. That's why I continue to. I don't want to see the Blacklist with James Spader end, but this is the final season. But I haven't missed a season. I am also excited that finally the fifth season of Yellowstone is going to be on Peacock so I can binge watch it, because it may be the only final season. It may be the final season the way they're talking. I don't know. But why am I so hooked on these shows? Because they don't give me all the big bells and whistles all at once, right? They dole them out slowly and give me a reason to come back. Which is why the whole Bloodline storyline, we've been down that road. That's why it's been so successful. And it's also why when on A&W, when wrestler A comes out and sees wrestler B, and they just all of a sudden punch each other, or I don't like your shirt, okay, well, let's have a loser leaves town match. Or so. I mean, what? I don't even understand. Am I excited about that? Probably not. Are not as excited as I can be if those same two guys are taking several weeks to feed me a little bit at a time to make me want to see more and finally blow it off. I know, you know what? And I'll say this till they put me in a grave. You can call me old school. You can call me anything you want. Don't cost you anything. But there's a lot of basics in the wrestling business that don't need to be changed, and they don't work if you change them, or they don't work as effectively if you change them. But if you are the genius that has a computer and thinks it's necessary, then go for it. But I think you'll find that when you go back to a lot of the tried and true basics, they work, and they'll continue to work if done properly.
And you can learn to do things properly if you have our resident legend at your wrestling school for a weekend training camp. Time for that portion of the program, sir. We let everybody know that they get a hold of you and some quality wrestling viewing as well as some T-shirts.
Well, if you'd like to book me for, haunting a house, an autograph session, one-day seminar, or weekend training camp, you can reach me at lesthanthatcher28@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to send you out all that information. And we'll try to work it out. And this, in terms of T-shirts, pro wrestling tees, you can get a copy of the very first ever pro wrestling T-shirt. It was the Briscoe Booster T-shirt put out by Jack, Jerry, and myself in 1972. Artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And as I said, those are at pro wrestling tees. And we're going to have some of those at the Hall of Fame in July as well. And Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, now joined by Volume 3, all our six-hour content of all the history of the HWA, the original HWA, from the time we founded it till the time I sold it in 2002, and matches, interviews, and as many extras as Joe Dombrowski and myself do the voiceover. And you can get copies of that at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. Brian Pillman shows Anthology, the 20th year anniversary, four DVD sets, 15 hours plus with content, all four of those shows from 1998 through 2001, matches, interviews, awards, extras, and so much, so many big stars that are current or were fledglings back then and other big stars. It brings ECW, WCW, and WWF all together under the same roof. And you won't find that anywhere else. And you can get those at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses above that I mentioned, Joe-Dombrowski and Pro Wrestling Library. So check them out. I think you'll enjoy them. Yeah. And we're looking forward to a decent weekend, a big build up to the Memorial Day weekend, huh?
That is true. I need the Lakers to get back into this series, though. I can't have a sweep.
I heard that. Yes, we got to get that. I want to see LeBron go home with one more ring. One more. Well, at least a co, because I won't be mad if the Celtics win. But, yeah. My Dodgers are doing well, though, right?
Oh, well, listen, you're just such a front runner. Look at you.
I've been a Dodger fan since 1953.
I know. That's right. Why I'm giving you a hard time.
I am a front runner. Anyway, I guess that about wraps us up for this weekend. But if you're going out traveling, you're going vacation or whatever you're doing, be safe out there. Thank you for listening.
Yes, and be sure to take us with you. If you've got a nice short work week, know that we'll be on schedule once again. So if you need some professional wrestling podcasts to listen to, wherever you will be vacationing by this time next week, we'll have one up for you then. We're going to wrap this one up, though, here and now. For the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of this weekend to spend some of it here with us at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And we will, in fact, be ready to talk to you again next week.